Welcome to Mormon Happy Hour. My name is Colleen Dietz. Join me and my guests each week for an entertaining recap of the hottest topics in Mormonism. We keep tabs on social media and headline news so you don't have to. Don't miss our live pro tips as you adjust to your new and exciting post-Mormon life. Mormon Happy Hour is here to bring you the irreverent side of Mormonism, wherever you may be. Welcome to episode 23. Today I want to give a shout out to our newest Patreon supporters, Laura and Thomas. Thank you both so much for making this all happen. We are working towards our goal of reporting live. You can't see my air quotes, but they're there. Reporting live from Salt Lake Sunstone Symposium this July. We had a great time bringing you interviews from presenters and attendees at the Phoenix Sunstone this March. If you haven't checked them out, then I'm going to put links to them in the show notes. They're so much fun. The Salt Lake Summer Symposium for Sunstone is going to be a two-day who's who of amazing people and presentations to bring back to you. Please, if you can pitch in $5, whatever you can to help us get there, we will definitely bring it back to you in amazing content. On today's agenda, there are a few very important items to discuss first, and then we will recap into the leak that just dropped on Wednesday, May 30th from Mormon Leaks regarding the $32 billion in investment holdings that are linked directly to the LDS Church. Ryan McKnight, the man from Mormon Leaks himself, will be joining us to answer a few listener questions and give us a behind-the-scenes peek at the process. I have an extra special treat for you today. Delaney Darko stops by to offer financial tips to the LDS Church, since they seem to have an abundance of funds just sitting in the stock market. She has some brilliant ideas, guys. I really hope the church is listening. Zarahemla, the action-packed theme park, anyone? Don't run away too soon or you'll miss them. They are waiting for you at the very, very end. Before we get started on the episode today, I wanted to take just a moment to talk about last week's episode regarding the hoax NAACP apology that was created by Jonathan Streeter. As I listened back to the episode, I cringed as I heard something that I said that I am very sorry and embarrassed for the comment I made. I mentioned how Black Mormons felt after this hoax, and that it must have been a shitty thing for sure for them to feel, but that I was grateful for what I had learned and become more aware of as a result of the hoax. I am deeply sorry for that comment. Black Mormons should not have to be hurt for me to become aware of their painful experiences, and I am sorry that I express gratitude for the hoax being created. This was a very wrong thing for me to say, and I know that now, and I will do better, and I am very sorry. We have some news for you this week. It is sad news. My co-host Miranda has chosen to move on from Mormon Happy Hour. Please take a moment to wish her well. I'm so grateful for the enthusiasm, talent, and effort she put into creating Mormon Happy Hour thus far. Thank you for sharing my dream with me, Miranda.
I have some sad news today. I'm leaving the podcast. I've had a wonderful time creating Mormon Happy Hour and being able to connect with all of you heathens. Take a shot of vodka for and in behalf of me. Cheers.
Moving forward, don't you worry for a minute that Mormon Happy Hour is going anywhere. I have come to love you, the listeners, and the community we all have become. Meeting you and collaborating on ideas and being guests on the show, it's all just pure joy to me. Heck, the other day, a listener recognized me at Costco, completely unshowered. It was the worst day for me. But she ran up to me, she was happy, and I promise you, I freaked out more than she did. I was like giddy like a schoolgirl, I wanted a picture, I needed her name, I was the fangirl. It was amazing. What I'm telling you is, this is fun. Creating Mormon Happy Hour has genuinely helped me turn a lot of the negativity surrounding leaving the LDS Church into some serious light-mindedness and loud laughter, with some evil speaking of the Lord's anointed thrown in wherever I can. It's my therapy, and I really hope that it has become the same for you. There will be some growing pains as adjustments are made and as rhythm is established again, but I still have a goal of delivering you weekly episodes, but I will be producing it all on my own for now. Please be patient with me. This is also the part where I reach out to you, my beloved listeners, and offer you a chance to guest for an episode or a segment and provide the entertaining commentary that makes the show come to life. If that sounds like a kick-ass time for you, then find me on Facebook if you haven't already and reach out. Tell me what current event blows your skirt up, or if you want to hear what's burning me up this week, then you can do that too. Thank you all for your continued support. Mormon Happy Hour has a great listener base. You make creating all that more fulfilling. We have only just begun this together. Last week on May 22nd, there was a press release on the Mormon Newsroom entitled Church Finances and a Growing Global Faith. And within that press release, they talked about finances, global, lots of things that aren't really important. But when the real meat and potatoes was in a Reddit post by the Reddit user Joseph Humbert Humbert. And the title was, Big News, the church finally admitted tithing money funds its for-profit business. A common refrain from TBMs defending the church finances is that tithing money and business money are somehow separate, typically used when trying to justify the church building City Creek, luxury housing, etc. Well, the church just smashed that argument to pieces with its financial release today. Quote, resources used to carry out this work come principally from the tithing donations of church members. A small portion of funds come from businesses maintained by the church. Question, where does the money for the church's reserves come from? Answer, the vast majority of church operations are funded through the sacred tithes and offerings given by its members. The church operates within its means and sets aside a portion of its funds each year. The church follows the financial principles it teaches, living within a budget, avoiding debt, and saving and investing for the future. Unquote. So far, so good. No TBM would quibble with that. They'd feel smugly righteous about it. But wait, this part is the clincher. Back to quote. Church members are taught to gradually build a financial reserve by regularly saving a portion of their income, providing in the Lord's Way, Summary of a Leader's Guide to Welfare, booklet 2009. The church applies this same principle in its own savings and investments. In addition to food and emergency supplies, the church also sets aside funds each year for future needs. These funds are added to church reserves, which include stocks and bonds, taxable businesses, agricultural interest, and commercial and residential property. In summary, where does the money come from? Tithing. Where does the money go? At least some of the money goes into the church's own for-profit businesses, straight from the church's own mouth. Another TBM apologetic line bites the dust. So, and then he, of course, references the Mormon Newsroom article that I mentioned earlier. I will put that in the show notes. And today, lucky for us, we actually have Ryan McKnight, who can talk to us a little bit about the financial side. This is a Ryan McKnight from Mormon Leaks, by the way.
Is there any other Ryan McKnight?
not that I know of.
You're supposed to say the one and only. I thought you told me you were going to say that.
You didn't pay me enough, Ryan. I was waiting for that deposit.
You'll get your money when I get mine. How about that?
Okay, fair enough. I will keep waiting. So what do you think?
Pretty bland. It's pretty generic. I don't think they really revealed anything. At least to me, I don't know. Maybe some people that don't pay as much attention to it, to what's going on. Maybe it did. Mm-hmm. But they basically say, you know, yes, we invest in private industry, you know, whether it be the stock market or commercial assets, residential assets, all of the above. And, you know, it all goes for sort of the betterment of the church, I guess, long term.
So nothing exciting, nothing you didn't already know?
No, I don't think so.
Okay. So now that we've kind of covered that news, I think this would be a good time to bring in the leak that dropped today, actually, this morning. So I will just sum up that, if you don't mind, and then we can kind of maybe draw some conclusions. Maybe there's some connection there. Don't know. So there was a Mormon leak that dropped early this morning. And in that Mormon leak, the title is Investment Portfolios Connected to the Mormon Church was the header that is found on the Mormon Leaks wiki page. You mentioned the press release that we just mentioned. Mm-hmm. And then yeah,
that's why I figured I should read it before I link to it in my wiki. I'm half joking, but I'm actually kind of serious. When I was first putting this together last week, I said, well, I better read this because at some point there's probably going to be an interview where they ask me about it.
Here it is. So Mormon Leaks has uncovered 13 LLCs that appear to have ties to the Mormon Church. All of these companies, save one, filed an SEC Form 13F, which is the Securities Exchange Commission. Is that what that stands for?
Yeah. And there's a link there for people that visit the I assume in the show notes there'll probably be a link to this wiki page. Yes. They'll see there's a link that'll go. It goes to like a frequently asked questions page for the SEC, and it kind of gives a layman's terms explanation of what a 13F is.
Okay, perfect.
And I think really the only key thing I think that's important to this conversation would be that companies who are invested in the stock market, in the U.S. stock market, are required to file a 13F once they have over $100 million in holdings in the stock market. That's sort of the trigger.
Okay.
That makes them have to file the 13F.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So over $100,000, $100 million that you are managing, then you have to file the 13F?
Yeah. I don't know if, honestly, I'm not sure if managing is the right word. It might be, but I would say, if it has $100 million or more in holdings in the U.S. stock market, they have to file a 13F.
Okay.
I don't think manage is the right word because I believe you could be paying a third party to manage the fund.
Okay.
And you would still, in my understanding from talking to some people who do this when I was researching this information, if you were to pay a third party to manage your fund, mm-hmm. Let's say you have a fund that is all yours and it's over $100 million, but somebody else, you're paying a third party to manage it, you mm-hmm. would still be required to file a 13F, and they would also be required to file a 13F. So there would actually be two 13Fs on your information.
So one for the owner and one from the manager.
Yeah. And I mean, if I'm wrong, you know, somebody that knows more about it than me can correct me, but that is my understanding based on, you know, when I was preparing this leak, I spent quite a bit of time trying to research, you know, what it is, you know, the 13F and all of, you know, the types of businesses that, and I spoke to a guy that manages funds like this. Mm-hmm. And that was what he explained to me. So,
okay.
Hopefully I didn't, you know, misunderstand him or whatever, but that's my understanding of how the 13F works.
The most recent Form 13F filing for the other company, Clifton Park Capital, was filed for the year ending 2015. So most of them are 2017. The combined value of each company at the filing for their most recent year end 13F is approximately $32 billion. This year ending December 31st, 2017 to December 31st, 2015 for CPCM, holdings for each LLC have been compiled in a spreadsheet. The spreadsheet contains a summary tab with the name of each organization, the business manager, according to SEC filings, and the total value of the stock portfolio at the end of the most recent calendar year for which there is a filing. Additionally, there is a tab for each LLC wherever the share owner is listed. So this was the description that was found on the wiki page of Mormon Leaks. And shortly after this leak dropped, KUTV 2 News in Salt Lake City also ran an article. And their article was entitled, which I know that we'll have to talk about that, Mormon Leaks, : the LDS Church owns at least $32 billion in U.S. stock markets. And I know that there is
Where's that headline from?
It's KUTV.
Oh, okay. Well, one thing that if people don't already know, editors and news directors and whoever making the decision on headlines always try to go with the most sensationalized headline they can.
Right.
And in most cases, reporters have no control over what the headline is. So don't ever take too much stock in a headline. That's not the headline I would have used, but yeah. I know the article that you're referring to now that you've mentioned it, and I thought the actual article itself was actually pretty good. So
yeah, and that's why I wanted to refer to it now, because it gives a pretty direct summary of all the important information that can be found on the Mormon Leaks wiki page. The parts that I thought that were interesting was The forms require business managers to be listed, and Mormon Leak said that it attempted to contact all the managers of the LLCs, spoke to three of the 13, and one confirmed that she was the business manager of their respective LLC. Mormon Leak said two men denied their connection to their respective LLC. That manager that confirmed the connection told Mormon Leak she could not answer if the LLC was owned by the Mormon Church. Mormon Leak also claims each of the 13 LLC business managers listed correspond to a 2015 employee directory of the Mormon Church, obtained but not published by Mormon Leak. And you saw comment from, KUTV saw comment from the LDS Church and was referred to a statement from the Mormon Newsroom, which was released a week ago about church finances, and where they all again reference the fact that tithes and offerings are the vast majority of its financial resources, and that these funds are added to the church reserves, which include stocks and bonds. And then the article goes on to list all 13 companies and the actual dollar amount that each one owns, and it is astounding. I mean, for me, because I'm a small change type of person, most of these companies, most of them are, for starters, already over $1 billion. And then some of them are in the, I don't think any of them really break 5 billion, do they? No, they're all under 4 billion. So yeah. Their combined total is $32 billion. So what I wanted to talk to you today, since there was this press release from Mormon Newsroom last week, and then suddenly this leak or this tip came to you. You yourself did a lot of research into this particular leak. This is a lot of legwork. This is a lot of effort and time that it took you to kind of put it all together, right?
That's true, but I do want to emphasize that this was a true team effort, and the person who tipped us off to this probably, you know, I don't know how many hours he put into it. I never asked him, but the work that we put into it, we probably would not have been able to do without his work. So he put a lot of work into it. A lot of what we did was verifying his work. Mm-hmm. And a lot of what we did was obviously the whole write-up, you know, on the wiki and the organization of that and the screenshots, you know, all the screenshots that we did, all of the DNS investigation, you know, Ethan did all that. Okay. But it really was, you know, it was a team effort. So with phone calls and typing and editing, you know, I probably came close to 40 hours on this one.
Wow. How does that stack up to a normal leak?
Well, it's a lot. Yeah. Most leaks are just a couple of hours.
Okay. So this one was huge.
Yeah. Oh yeah. This is, I mean, in terms of, you know, legwork that it required, and also I think, you know, for me personally, significance, I think it's possibly one of our biggest. You know, the McKenna Denson tape maybe rivals this as far as how much work I put into it.
Yeah, that one took a lot of time too.
Yeah, but yeah, most of the time, you know, if we receive a document and especially if we can verify it quickly, it's really it doesn't take that much, you know, the secret, I don't want to let the secret out, but you know, it doesn't take that much to post it online.
Right. Yeah. So was there a connection between this press release from the Mormon Newsroom and this tip? Did you already have the tip before the newsroom came out, or was it after? Like, what was that timeline like?
Well, I mean, that's a great question. I don't know that I can really fully answer it right now, because as of right now, our source wants anonymity. And so, you know, we're respecting that. And, you know, he knows that if that changes at any point, you know, we're happy to, you know, put his name out there and give him all the credit he deserves. But because of that, I think the only thing I'm really going to say right now is that I'd say we have very strong reason to believe that their press release was connected to this.
Okay.
I can't really say much more than that right now, but you know, I hope to be able to.
Okay.
You know, can I prove it for sure? No, but I think when the day comes that we kind of share the whole timeline about how everything went down, I think most people will probably come to the conclusion that this was either all or in large part inspired by the impending publication of this information.
Okay. Okay. Well, that's a good sneak peek.
Yeah. And, you know, we did actually, this is the first leak where prior to the leak, we've attempted to get a comment from the newsroom.
Yes.
Yeah. And so, I mean, that, you know, that should tell people how significant we felt it was. And we really, because of how sensitive, you know, it is whenever you're talking about money, and especially this amount of money, if we're going to sort of, you know, try to trace these dots, we felt that it was only fair. So yeah, this was the first time, like, I picked up the phone and I called, you know, I asked to speak to Eric Hawkins, and, you know, his secretary took a message and said she would pass it along, and I guess he didn't feel it important enough to call me back. I didn't expect him to call me back. So, but we tried, and that was after we called the 13 employees.
Okay.
So, you know, I was basically the main question that we were after was, and I don't think they would have answered even if he would have called me back, but the main question we had for them was, does the Mormon Church own these LLCs in full? And the one lady who is the business manager who did say that she was, the business manager, I asked her that question and she said she can't answer it. One of the things that we didn't really include in there is I followed that up by saying, okay, so you're not able to tell me one way or the other. And she said, no, I'm not. And then, you know, kind of that was it.
Mm-hmm.
And I wanted to tell Eric Hawkins that I had one of his employees who told me that, not his employees, but you get the point, but that one of the employees confirmed that they were the business manager and that we would like to know if the church owns these LLCs or not. That's what we wanted to ask them. But I don't think, you know, based on, you know, people that I've talked to there, you know, at church office building that that do talk to me, it's my understanding that, you know, they have kind of this loose policy, or, and I don't think this is like a memo that went out or anything. Maybe it was, I don't know. But I think it's more just an informal sort of verbal policy that, you know, they don't want to acknowledge us in any way formally.
Right.
So I think that has played out. I don't think they've ever mentioned us in any of their responses. I know that they've only actually formally responded to like one or two of our leaks. Their normal sort of MO is to just no comment anytime any reporter calls them. McKenna Denson, obviously they responded.
Yeah.
And when we leaked the pay stubs, they issued a direct response for that, but they still didn't mention Mormon leaks. But yeah, so I think we're just kind of like, you know, we're like the Rodney Dangerfield in that lobby, you know, can't get respect. So
yeah, but they don't,
at this point I'm used to it, right?
they can't acknowledge that you exist, because then that just drives more attention to you and will legitimize.
Well, I mean,
oh no,
I think that's what they think. I don't necessarily agree with that, but I mean, you know, I'm just, I'm not that bad of a person, but maybe they, you know, maybe they think that, you know, some sort of like 7 years of plague or something's going to fall upon them if they engage me. I don't know. I can only assume, because they won't talk to me. So I can only assume. So I will assume that they think that if they talk to me, that they will melt, and that, you know, somehow I will wield some sort of satanic powers over them. You know, they're just not willing to take a risk like that. That's probably why they won't talk to me.
Or, you know, just the phone call alone, you could send some, you know, verbal voice virus through the lines and just expose everything.
Well, yeah, and I mean, I'm sure that Dallin Oaks and maybe before he died, Boyd Packer, let them know about people in the homosexual agenda and Satanists and Antichrist like me, you know, have the ability to do those kinds of things. So they're doing the right thing.
And it's funny that we laugh, but at the same time, there's probably a small amount of truth to that statement right there that you gave.
I hope not. But yeah, maybe. Hey, you know what? At this point, I think I have to say I would believe almost anything. So, you know, I mean, it's like, as soon as you think, well, no, that's too crazy for them to believe, then you find out then they actually believe it. So yeah, you know, you're probably right. In fact, we may just go ahead and create a wiki page and put it out there as if it was gospel.
The next leak. You heard it here. So I did see some questions out there since you were talking about calling the manager.
On the SEC filing, they're listed as business manager.
Okay.
So I have no idea what that means to the SEC. I don't know if that means they're the, you know, person signing the checks. I don't know if it means they're the secretary. I really, you know, it's such a generic title. Who knows what that means to the SEC?
So the question that I saw come up is people that talked about those, the two that denied that they were the business managers for whatever companies that they were listed as, there were some concerns that possibly they could have like done some trickery based on, you know, the way you phrased the question to get out of whether or not they were the business managers.
My impression walking away from the phone call was that they were lying to me.
Both of them.
And that was, yeah. And that was even before the lady who acknowledged it, she was actually the third person that answered. Uh-huh. So I'd already spoken to the other two. And even before she answered, I assumed nobody was going to answer or they were all going to say no.
Right.
Even before she answered yes, the way they said it, the tone in their voice, especially one of them who really tried to get off the phone very quickly, I walked away with the impression that they were lying. But I mean, who knows? I can't obviously prove that. That was just my impression. Well, I mean, I guess it's possible that their names are on these forms without their knowing, but I seriously doubt that.
Yeah. And so how did the conversations go with the two that denied it?
All of the conversations lasted under a minute. So,
okay.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, I asked them, I said, oh, you know, so for example, I think one of them's name is Aaron Davis. And you know, he answers the phone, you know, this is Aaron. I said, oh, Aaron Davis. He said, yes. I said, Aaron Davis, you're the business manager for such and such LLC. No, I'm not. I said, okay, my name's Ryan McKnight with Truth and Transparency Foundation. And, you know, I'm doing some follow-up on some SEC filings and I'm trying to figure out, you know, who owns these LLCs, but I guess this isn't you. And he said, no, it's not me. You have the wrong number. You know, something like this. I'm paraphrasing it.
Wow.
And the call was over and the other call went almost identical to that. And then with the lady, her name was Christy. And I said, you know, Christy Woodward, you're the business manager of such and such LLC. She said, and for her, she said it like, yes. You know, like almost like in a real hushed tone. And then I said, oh, okay. I said, hey, my name's Ryan McKnight with Truth and Transparency Foundation. I'm doing some follow-up on these SEC filings. And I'm just trying to figure out whether or not the LDS Church owns these LLCs. And that's when she said, I can't.
She just said, I can't answer that.
I can't answer that. Yeah. Yeah. She said, I can't answer that. And then I said something like, okay, just to clarify, when you say you can't answer that, it's not that you don't know. It's that you can't answer one way or the other. And she said, yes. And then I said, okay, fair enough. Thank you for your time. And I hung up.
Interesting. Well, that's fascinating.
Yeah.
Well, thank you for your time, Ryan. It was a pleasure.
Yeah.
You have a wonderful evening and we will catch up.
All right. You too.
Thank
Bye.
You. Catch the second half of my chat with Ryan McKnight of Mormon Leagues in its full, unedited form on our Patreon account. We go off the rails a bit talking about being banned from various social media groups and the irony of TBM sex groups on Facebook. Ryan shares a few personal stories as he expounds on the latest leak and his visions for Mormon Leagues as a whole. Take a shot each time we get off topic, and I promise it will be a good time. That wraps up today's topics. We are so glad you stopped by. Be sure to join the Mormon Happy Hour on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Patreon. If you smiled, please drop us a 5-star review wherever you found us. See you next week. Cheers!
Hey Colleen, this is Delaney Darko. I'm just popping in to say hi. I heard about the leak and, you know, I was thinking, it just seems like the church has way more money than they know what to do with. So I know, yikes, watch out for the Pride Cycle. That's the first thing I thought of. So I thought I would help them out and give them some ideas free of charge. This is free financial advice on how to get rid of some of that extra cash that keeps spilling over into LLCs and for-profit investments and things like that. So it seems like they like to keep the wealth within the organization. So I took that as my guide and I came up with this list. The number one priority is every missionary needs to be on a Segway. They will be much more approachable and super cool proselyting on a Segway. Number two, bring back the roadshow. There are way too many closeted gay members who deserve to let their light shine. Waiting for Guffman style, I want to see Manti pageant level production at the ward level. Salt Lake City will be like the Broadway Mecca. And number three, it would be a really nice gesture to the new members of the Young Women to hand out gem-encrusted chastity belts at New Beginnings. And the gems would match the Young Women value colors, of course. And, you know, it's like they say, chastity is a girl's best friend. Speaking of chastity, the church could give the garments an upgrade in protection power. That they could issue garments that are both flame retardant and bulletproof. And they may as well make them antimicrobial and sweatproof too. Can I get an amen, sisters? They could fund a private enterprise space exploration program to literally high to co-op. They could sponsor temple endowment session rewards points programs. Members who are temple worthy, of course, could collect points with every endowment session completed and redeem like a couple's night at a Marriott hotel or something like that. The church could have some fun and build like a Land of Zarahemla theme park. America would be thrilled. Another idea I had was they could produce a youth survivor reality TV series. You thought Trek was hard? Forget about it. I mean, that poor girl who didn't pull her share of the hand cart in the women's pool just got voted out of the tribe. That is bound to get high ratings. They should put those Mr. Max suits to use and train the brethren as secret agents to combat human trafficking. I'm just saying, the need is there. And lastly, every bishop should get a new car. You get a car, you get a car, you get a car, you get a car. Now, I know this list is a big joke, but so is the church's financial transparency. It shouldn't take a leak for this information to be public. Come on, church, it's 2018. It's time for full financial transparency. What have you got to hide? They may as well make them antimicrobial. All right, peace out, lady. Talk to you soon.